and welcome to We Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, and welcome to 2020. This is the first episode of the new year, and ringing in the new year is the second half of the 2018 pairing. I respect this movie too much to make a joke. It's Joel here.
Hello, I'm Joel. I'm here to talk about this movie.
Yes, so this is Choplifters, the winner from 2018 by the director, it's Koreeda.
Hirokazu Koreeda.
Yeah, that's it. And he had other movies play at Cannes before, but this is the first time he actually won a Palme d'Or, and he's kind of a big name in current Japanese film, but I never heard of him until Choplifters.
I feel like I may have heard of him. No, I don't think I had either, but, you know, when Choplifters became popular, then other people were talking about other movies of his that were also good. He's made quite a few movies.
Yeah.
At least based on what I'm looking on Letterboxd here.
And on the Pink Smoke podcast, on their Choplifters episode, Chris and John have been fans of him for a while. Like, have been following him, so, like, it's... So, like, he has been, like, a big name internationally, just... I just never really, heard about him, because, I don't watch, like, art movies, like, current art movies in general, or, like, foreign movies in general.
Yeah, you just watch trash, just trash all day long, trash, trash, trash.
I'm playing catch-up, because I never went to film school, so I'm watching all the weird shit everyone watches when they're younger.
Man, I didn't go to film school either.
Yeah.
And that's why I only watch trash. No, okay.
Oh, and Pure Cinema did some episode. I forgot what the topic was, but one of them recommended, maybe Elric, Koreeda's first film, Afterlife, which is maybe sounds like you would like. It's like, I forgot the whole premise, but it's this very interesting, like, look at the afterlife. I mean, late 90s in the movie is kind of hard to find now. But, yeah.
After death, people have just 1 week to choose only a memory to keep for eternity.
And it's, like, treated like it's a movie studio where they're, like, filming it. Oh, and Koreeda made an English language movie this year called The Truth, and I heard...
Yes, that's coming out. It hasn't actually been released anywhere yet.
According to the people I know who went to TIFF, they said it's fine. And that's kind of it.
Sounds good.
Yeah, and good cast. Juliette Binoche, she's in High Life. Ethan Hawke. Catherine Deneuve. Other people, but... Yeah. I've only heard meh things about it. Okay, so Choplifters. Was this the first time you've seen it?
Yes.
Oh. I saw it at the local art house theater near me that is very small and independent, and I was surprised that they got this, and once I heard I could actually see some theater, I made it a point to drive an inconvenient distance away just to see this movie, and I got to see it in this tiny theater that's had maybe 10 seats, I fell in love with this movie, and it's one of my favorite movies of last year. Not my favorite movie of last year, but it definitely blew me away. Like, for me, it lived up to the hype, and it has one of my favorite film moments in recent years. But we'll get to that moment.
Well, I want to hear it now. What the heck are you talking about?
It's in the last 15 minutes where the dad and the the quote unquote dad and quote unquote son are saying goodbye to each other, possibly for the last time,
Yeah.
and
I see.
the dad running in this, trying to catch off the bus, he's just trying to get his son's attention, and the son finally calls him dad, but he can't hear it like that. That's like one of his favorite film moments of like the last decade.
Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I don't I wasn't like blown away or anything like that though. I don't I didn't know where it was going in the
Okay.
plot.
Did
I kind of like kept trying to guess, but it hadn't been spoiled for me or anything like that.
Okay, that's good, because the trailer spoils the big reveal in the last half hour, which
Oh.
I kind of hate that the trailer did that.
Yeah, I didn't really get or I didn't watch the trailer or
Okay.
anything like that, so I didn't really. I just, like they kept like revealing things like
Like when he said, like, this isn't, like, we had to bury a body again. Something along those lines.
oh yeah, I don't yeah, I didn't even notice that line.
Oh.
I just meant like the kid being like, "Oh, you," or the dad, the parental dad figure in this one. It's like, "Oh, you're not ready to call me dad yet, right?" And like, "Oh, okay, so is this kid not his son, or is, something else going on like that?" And it's like, and the younger woman, when she's telling grandma about her job, and she's like, "That's your sister's name." I'm like, "Oh, did her sister die? Was she like her kid or something like that?" Like, I was just trying to like put together all these pieces, but yeah, I did not figure it out.
Yeah, they really, second time through, they really lay it out pretty thick, if you know what's going on. Because there are all these nods, like in the, like when you first see the mom figure, Nobuyo, I think it's a character, yeah, Nobuyo, she's outside, like taking a smoke break, and she and her friend are gossiping, and they see, like, the, I guess the foreman or someone, and they're like, the baby doesn't even look like them. And which
Yeah.
is first time through, you just think it's just paid gossip, but second time through, it's like, oh, it's foreshadowing of what the fa what the Shibata family it actually is like. There are little like things throughout.
It's weird to me that did you read like where this guy where Koreeda came up with the idea?
A while ago, but I didn't look it up again.
I think it was just like he heard, like he read a story, a news story or something like that about people who were cashing in their long dead relatives, what's that called?
And pension?
Pension, yeah, cashing in their pension after long after their relatives had died, just to get by, and basically wrote off from that part. And yeah, I don't know. He crafted a pretty good version of poverty
Oh yeah,
in that, but it's also got this kind of weird Imamura twisty thing where it's like, what are the relationship with these people? Like,
okay, I was thinking Imamura too this time around.
yeah.
Like, I was thinking
Yeah, for
Ozu,
sure.
because like it's just kind of like a hangout family thing, except we can get to this now. So a lot of people compare people who I think have only ever watched like Tokyo Story and Late Spring say Shoplifters is just like Ozu, but like it really isn't. Like in vague, it
No.
vaguely is because like it's a family thing. It's kind of a hangout, like mostly calm movie. But like Ozu dealt with the middle class like almost exclusively. Like he didn't really get into poverty. He was ex always curious about the middle class and like fathers and daughters. And this is just like it's. I see what they're talking about, but it's like I don't know. It's this shows that you haven't. Those people haven't watched enough Ozu to really get him, I
Right,
think.
Ozu's also like firmly in tradition. Like his family's, you know, every once in a while, like, oh, the daughter's doing this, that's unusual, but they always, like, seem to end up back at the point where it's like, oh, this is the proper thing you should be doing, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, you know, things like Good Morning, where we're fitting modern-day Marvels into this new society, but we're still basically a traditional Japanese town with the traditional, you know, values there.
Yeah.
This Shoplifters has a seediness that is not, you know, there's nothing weird with the kids or anything like that, thank God. But there's a peek into this, like, it's not desperation, it's like, I don't even know. There you just know something weird is going on. Like, I mean, sure, they basically kidnap a little girl, although it's not against her will or anything like that in the beginning. So it's like, of course something weird's going on. But it's like, well, you don't really know who these people are to each other eventually. You don't even know. Like, when grandma's like, oh, what's her name, doesn't have to pay rent. You know, that's the rules and stuff. It's like, well, what's going on with that? And then she's got the job she's doing.
Yeah.
And then it, like, her story is completely different. Like, oh, wait a minute. She, like, just kind of glommed on there. So, yeah. It feels Imamura without... It's somewhere in between.
It's Imamura without the transgressive, like, incest and, like, just going way too dark.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it kind of... I was thinking of... what's the Kurosawa movie with Richard Gere?
Rhapsody in August.
Rhapsody in August, you know, Grandmama there with all her younglings. I just used a Star Wars term. Please erase that from my brain. all the youngins at her house, and I don't know, just, it didn't really ever feel like the family does show up at some point in that movie, I remember. But there's kind of like a loose family group that happens to hang out with grandma. I don't know.
Now, I see you're talking going, about,
but like, it did remind me of it.
Yeah. Like, this definitely feels like it's in the tradition of... Well, there's one sequence in particular that, like, is straight up an Ozu sequence. When the mom figure gets fired... And they're, like, talking over... Well, they're about to get fired, and she and her friend are talking it over. You have the wide mid-shot of her and her friend at opposite ends of the screen, and then you have this, like, dead center cutting between them as they're talking. And, like, the friend is talking at the camera.
Yeah.
But besides that, like, it's... Like, it... I like it, but I find it a little distracting, because, like, he's clearly homaging Ozu, which is, you know, a light influence here, but at the same time, it's like, I find it a little distracting. But I don't know, that's me.
Sure, but only a dork like you would notice that, so...
That is true. Yeah, we should probably say what the overall plot is, and we're gonna go full spoiler alert, and this is a movie that I think you should go in blind, because, like, you shouldn't know the twist. Cause
we've already given away too much, but
that's true.
You should totally watch it and without reading up on it.
Yeah. So, basically, it's a family of people who they're very poor, and there's a strange relationship of, like, you're not quite sure how they're related. None of them look that similar, and the mom and dad basically, you know, adopt / kidnap a little girl who has an abusive home life, and they become a family, and then through a series of events, the young son, who is middle school age, like 12 or 13, he gets fed up with this certain things, and then he gets caught on purpose, and that just unwinds this, the whole scheme that the family has been doing, and you learn that the family, none of them are related. It was the mom and dad were lovers, and they killed the woman's husband in a crime of passion in his body. And,
when they're running away, they somehow ended up in this older lady's, like, hiding out with the old lady.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Basically, I think it's explained, but it's not really important. But,
yeah. And then, like, the further twist is the old lady is, husband left her for another woman who he had a family with, and so she's basically been, getting money from them, you know, from some sort of guilt thing going on, but this other family's daughters, went off with the old lady and has been living there. And yeah, the little boy's the mystery character. Like, where did he go? They say they picked him up as not as a baby, right? Couldn't have been a baby.
No, because he remembers them.
Yeah.
So he must have been like a child. Well, a smaller child. Like, I pictured it as, like, because he's so comfortable with him, I always figure, like, because he's 13-ish, because he's going through puberty, so, like, in the way he's so comfortable with everyone, I feel like it's been, I don't know, 5-6 years, maybe? Maybe longer? Because how comfortable... Mm-hmm. But, yeah, and so the police, because they have to follow the law, kind of break up the family.
Right, and that part's pretty heartbreaking because there's a lot of things being said that, like, the police... You basically see the police making these assumptions and doing things by the law, which may not have been the best things for some of these characters, you know. I think that the boy gets put in a home, because nobody knows... He doesn't know who his parents are. He doesn't remember at that point. He seems like he might be better off. You know, he's getting fed. He has a bed. Yeah. Stuff like that. Not sleeping in a closet. The little girl, though, the reason she was hiding out is because she had an abusive mother and would often kick her out of the house to do whatever she was going to do. And you know, we see a scene with the girl's mother all dressed up and in front of the cameras being like, I'm just glad my daughter's okay. I'm glad to get her back. But, you know, nobody knows the history. Burning that this child has, like, burn marks on her arm from her mom and stuff like that. We can only assume it's just going to continue to happen because she gets, you know, returned to her mother.
Yeah, and that there are little moments when the little girl's getting used to her new family where her new adoptive mom is buying her a bathing suit and the little girl is clearly very uncomfortable, and then she's like, basically says, are you going to hit me later? And it's just such a heartbreaking moment, and the grandma and the mom are like, no. No, we love you, we're not going to hit you.
No, grandma says she's going to hit her. No, I don't. Grandma dies, by the way.
Yeah, grandma dies. And, like, there's some immemora things that stuck out. Like, the hiding out element of, like, when you learn the history of the two parents, it feels like a little bit Vengeance is Mine, because that movie... do you know what Vengeance is Mine is about?
No.
It's immemora's very bleak but hilarious serial killer. Movie about a real-life serial killer who went on the run for a few months, and he hit out with a woman and her mother. And there's, like, there's weird, like sexual and violent tension between, like, the killer and the mom and the woman. But there's that, and the grandma dies. That feels like a segment... a segment in Profound Desire of the Gods, but I won't say more because it kind of spoils one of the wackier, weirder moments of the movie. And just like the whole poverty thing, because immemora was very fascinated with poverty. Like, he kind of approached it from like an anthropological like almost documentary. Like, well, he did make documentaries, but like he did approach it from like just like, looking at the life of poverty when he came from like a rich family. But like I think he did genuinely care about like poor people and showing that poor people do exist. But yeah, so there's some like to me some direct things.
I don't know. That sounds like he was like, poor people are disgusting. I'm going to make disgusting movies about poor people.
I think he is maybe an eccentric person, a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's then, and this did, and this is I've seen people say this is similar to Parasite, which, in broad strokes, it is. But Parasite is like takes the very, very, very general idea of this. But like, but more stylish and funny, and bigger. And this is,
I mean,
yeah.
where Shoplifters has Shoplifters is a lot of heart, a lot
Yeah.
of like the you know the whole thing is they feel like a family. They feel like they all love each other. They're all trying to do what's best for each other with their limited capacity, you know,
Yeah.
in the condition that they have to live in. Parasite, I mean, those, it's yeah, they're poor, but they've also get this kind of like a streak of like, I'm gonna get mine kind of thing.
Yeah, that's yeah. But like, I think it's also a little casually racist. Some of the comparisons, because like, they're both East Asian movies about poor families. That kind of ha that both won Cannes consecutively too, which
Yeah, same movie.
yeah, which is kind of. Pretty cool because like usually it's like some French movie or like Italian movie, which I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it's pretty cool to see like East Asian movies winning Cannes again, because I think
Yeah.
this is the first one to win the Palme d'Or Shoplifters was since Emma Mora did with The Eel in '97, and before that if Emma Mora won the Palme d'Or for Bala Noriyama, and Kurosawa won it for Kagamusha, which, sure, I guess so. Maybe I need to see that movie again to like it more.
I have a feeling if we saw it like in a theater or something, a theater environment, it might have a better effect on us, you know,
Maybe.
or at least we might come out feeling a little more starstruck by it.
Yeah. But it's just a.
See our previous episodes on Japanese movies.
Yeah. And, well, this is kind of all over the place, but who cares? This episode, I mean. But what is it? But interestingly, the Spike Lee movie, BlacKkKlansman, won the Grand Prix at Cannes in 2018. So this is the I think the only time we're going to do a pairing of the Grand Prix and the Palme d'Or winners.
Didn't you say somebody
Kessler.
always thought the Grand Prix, yeah, Kessler, so does he like BlacKkKlansman better than Shoplifters?
No, you never know with Kessler. But this is a case of, I think, Shoplifters is the better movie.
I think that they're both excellent movies. I think that they both scratch a certain wide appeal in a weird way. Like, even though for English speakers, Shoplifters, you know, has to be a subtitled movie, I still feel like the story and the emotional beats are so universal that, like, I think you could probably show this to anybody and they would feel something for it. And BlacKkKlansman is an incredibly watchable movie. Like, it is the kind of movie you could just kind of toss on,
Yeah.
but it's got that thick line of depth where it's like, are you really paying attention? Because you should be.
Yeah. I mean, I guess this kind of has a similar thing of like, are you paying attention? Because like, there are hints of, you know, what the of like the of the relationships kind of hidden throughout. And there's okay, there's one moment that I don't know, I'm trying to find some connection between the two. But I can't really think of that many really.
Like actual connections between Black Klansmen and shoplifters.
Yeah.
And I can't really.
Oh, the loosest one, I mean, the best one I could find is a very, very loose one, which is the police and Black Klansmen. Some of them are really shitty, and the police here are kind of shitty. But that's kind of it. But the police and shoplifters are shitty, but only because, like, we know the story of the family. Like,
right. And they, I mean, they, without getting the full story there, they are outright lying in some cases. Like, I think there was, who do they tell somebody, it's like, well, they didn't really care about you. Like, grandma or something like that didn't care. Or something weird like that.
They tell the, Aki, the, daughter from, you know, let's just call him like the daughter,
yeah, that's right.
The daughter, son, mom, dad, just to make things easier.
That's right.
Yeah, or I think he refers to her as auntie at one point. The dad does. So,
yeah, because I think that I assumed that was probably one of their sisters. You know, either mom or dad's sister, because she seemed too old to be, you know, one of their kids. But
yeah, it's true.
It turns out, no.
Yeah, because, another part of, like, the big reveal is you learn that the mom is infertile. Okay, because one of the cops, which he's in an interview, says, like, makes some kind of really unnecessary comment about, like, you kidnapped her because you can't have children of your own. And that's where she has, like, has that amazing monologue about, like, does giving birth automatically make you a mother?
The answer is yes. No. No?
No.
Maybe.
No, this movie clearly... I know you're joking, but, like, you know, the movie is clearly saying, like families can be chosen. And it's like you know, in a very much lighter way, like choosing your friends and who you... You know.
I mean, that's something they say in the movie a couple of times, right? Isn't it? Like, we chose our family?
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing to for people a lesson to take out of this movie that could be compared to Black Klansman, that like there is a very good message in Shoplifters about how you don't the people who raised you, birthed you, whatever, they don't have to be your family.
Yeah.
At a certain point you get to choose who you want to have in your life or not.
Yeah, it's just so universal and this wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And also, all little boys get boners, so don't feel bad about it.
Yeah, and I love the. I feel like we're just gonna like talk in general about it, no real organized way. So if you're listening, sorry if it's less structured than usual. But I love.
Have you heard our podcasts?
Yeah, that's true. But I love, like, the sex talk when the dad's like, I saw you staring at her boobs. It's okay. I like boobs, too. It's just such a frank and honest...
It's so positive and not like... He's not teasing him. He's not doing anything like that. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah,
There's another scene where he talks frankly about sex with the younger woman.
Mm-hmm.
When she's like, well, when do you guys, you know, she asks the dad, when do you and your wife find time to ever do it? And he's like, oh, we don't have that kind of relationship anymore. You know, we just, our love is, you know, he points at his chest. It's here. It's not down there.
Yeah.
And then, at some point, they do end up actually, you know, making out having sex, and it's not treated as anything like gross or weird. They both seem pretty happy about it afterwards.
Yeah.
I like how he's just repeating, I did it. Like, what's that mean? Like, maybe the whole issue was he couldn't, you know, get an erection or something like that, too, but I don't know.
He is noticeably older looking than his wife. But, yeah, I also love, you know exactly how the sex was. Because, what was that?
Oh, somebody just knocked out a building.
Okay. I love that, like, you know exactly how it went, because the mom says, like, makes some kind of, like, about she barely broke a sweat, and he's covered in sweat. And, like, you know, like, oh, he, like, he finished very quickly, because it's their first time in a very, very long time. But, the actress who plays the grandma, who was, to me, all the performances in the family are great and very distinct. But the grandma, yep. Who, I think she's arguably one of the more complex ones, because you don't know what she's about for a very long time. I think she might be the last one you learn, like, her secret. Or, you know, like, you learn, like, you know, how she's connected. But, the actress...
What's her secret?
I mean, like, her relationship with her husband's other family. Like, I think that might be the last, like, major family thing. No, never mind. I'm getting my mix up. But anyway, but the actress, Kieran Kiki, she died last September.
Mm.
She was 75. But, yeah, it's just kind of, warming it up like that. That's a performance that I really like. She's very like grandmotherly, but she's also is very real. And like, I love when she's with the young woman, and the young woman is like describing her job, and the grandma is not shameful or weird about it. She treats it like, oh, I guess side boob is the popular thing now. And this treats it as like totally normal.
I mean, describing that job. Weird. It's weird to me. I don't want to be judgmental about it or anything like that. It's just that was just an unfamiliar thing to me.
Yeah. I'm not sure what it is, because they're not like it's not prostitution. There's no body parts going in and out.
Right, and the guy who runs the place specifically is like. Like, he chastises one of the girls, like, hey, no fingers under the underwear. You'll get us closed down, you know?
Yeah. So, like, it's kind of like, this is a really dumb reference to bring up. In Workaholics, there's an episode where all three guys fall in love with the same cam girl, and they go to where she works, and it's just this giant building of different rooms where different, filled with a cam girl in each room. And, like, there's a really sleazy boss who's, like, in charge. And this feels like the same thing of, like, there's all these booths that these men go to. Do you know what I'm talking about? The episode of Workaholics? What?
No, I don't watch that show.
The first two seasons...
Is it a comedy show?
Yes, it's the first two seasons are very funny. Then after that, I...
So it's a comedy show where they go talk to porn people?
No, that's just one episode.
Oh.
Anyway, but it feels like that...
I'm laughing.
It's a really good episode, but the young one's job is basically like... I guess she's more or less a stripper slash, like, companion girl? But it's very sexual, but there's no touching. Like, it's this bizarre area.
She's like, she's behind a two-way mirror, and the guy can make requests, it seems like, but they're basically, like, humping the air with their clothes. You know, they're wearing, like, schoolgirl outfits, or yeah. I guess it could be whatever the guy requests. And it's not, yeah, there's no nudity, but... You know, I can't imagine that the idea behind it is not somebody beaten off to whatever these people are doing.
Yeah, and like, there is implied nudity because that the young woman in the family, she gets chastised by her boss because her boss is like, hey, no double panties. I've been getting complaints about you.
Double, right. But she was saying because she was wearing an extra layer.
Yeah.
And she should only be wearing one layer. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and like, there's like a private room where like they can do certain things, but the guy she gets is very sad and lonely, and he just wants someone just to touch him, basically.
I kind of don't like that story didn't end up somewhere, because it seemed like she was feeling like a connection with this specific client, and after that scene where they, you know, they go to the quote-unquote chat room where they're, like, actually physically touching each other. Like, he has his head on her lap while she's stroking his hair. And, it's a level of intimacy, which is strange to me. But that never goes anywhere, like, after that point.
I think
you never see the guy again.
I think it's hinted at. Not mentioned
in the job.
Because she says, like, she's out with a guy later on. I think it's supposed to be him. But yeah, like, that's one of the weaker parts of the movie, is like, the Aki character thing is a little underserved. I would have liked more, but then, like, the movie has such a good flow to it that, like, I think adding more of him might throw things off a little bit.
I mean, is her entire motivation is, like, she's jealous of her younger sister or something like that?
I think that's what I think that's what they're implying. She's jealous of her younger sister.
Like, her parents, for some reason, think she's in Australia?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, like, but that's kind of what I like about the movie. There's a lot of stuff for you just to fill in the blank and think about.
Sure.
Yeah. Which I feel like might annoy some people, because it's not really plot-driven. There's a light plot of, like, their hints of the past of the mom and dad figures throughout. But then the last half hour, suddenly it shifts, and it's, like, it's very plot-driven.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to the first, like, 90 minutes.
That's like in the summary for it. It's like an unforeseen incident reveals hidden secrets, testing the bonds that unite them. That's like literally the last like 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's just this happy family spending time together for 90 minutes. Right.
And I, the interesting thing to me about it is not the full reveal at the end, but like I said, you put together as many pieces as you can beforehand, and I really like the way they lay it out without telling you every single thing. You just, like, it naturally occurs in the story, like, oh, this is what's going on, oh, this is going on. And then, I mean, the big drop is like, oh, well, they murdered somebody, that's why they're... You know, that's why they're odd. Like, well, they're odd also, but...
Yeah, and they stole children.
Right. It's like, oh, they're people, you know, they're murderers, and they're stealing children, and they're lying to these kids, you know, it's all really shady.
Yeah, but like, you see the family together, and, like, it sounds shady saying out loud, but when you actually see them, it's like, oh, no, it's not that shady. Like, it's... They're just like it's the only family they have.
Yeah, they seem happy. They seem strangely happy. It's especially when the little girl comes into their life. The lady who plays the mom of the family. Mm-hmm. It seems like there was something she wasn't realizing she was missing from her life until this little girl came into it.
Yeah,
almost
Sakura Ando.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might be my favorite performance of the movie. Because
mm-hmm.
The dad, Lily Frankie, is the actor's name. He's kind of... and like for a long stretch, he's just kind of like a goofy, lazy dad. until the end, and like I feel like I don't know, like he's given stuff to do overall, but it also just feels like he, I don't know, like just like thinking back on it, the mom is really like the more bigger driving force of the family, and he's just kind of like a layabout. I don't know what I'm trying to say here. I like the character performance, and I like the contrast of the two personalities. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
I don't know. I don't got much more to say about it, you know.
Yeah. What do I have to say? I think part of why I love this movie so much is it reminds me of Haroon movies. And I wrote down exactly what made me think of Haroon movies. It's there are multiple scenes involving dinner, where in Haroon movies there's always a pivotal scene around a meal, and this has several pivotal scenes around a meal, because there's when the parents have sex, they're eating meal, when they bring in the little girl, they're eating, when like the little
Whoa,
girl
they eat a little girl?
yeah, and when the little girl comes, like starts to actually talk to them and interact with them, like they're eating dinner together. The grandma, young woman side boob scene is they're eating at a restaurant.
Right, they keep themselves fed, I think.
Yeah, but these are like key character moments, and like these big key character moments usually involve food. Like in the beginning, when like you have this amazing, well, I think amazing sequence of the dad and son stealing, and they have this very elaborate system of stealing, and like, and they after immediately afterwards they pick up some street food, and another Haroon thing is the two kids, because the son and the little girl are just hanging out. It feels like the way Haroon portrays children, which is like they're just children. He doesn't like make them precocious or or
Wise
loud, or
beyond their
yeah,
years.
like this movie does a great job of these are just kids in a weird situation, or like in a Haroon movie, Abuna, it's just these two brothers who are like one is 15, one is like 10, and they're just kids, and that's it, and they act like kids, and they go through the movie like kids. And I think that's the main thing. Like just those two food kids. Oh, and also Haroon does a thing of there's some element of the families that we choose and the families that we reject. Well, isn't well, not reject, but broken families is a thing in his movies and in the past, but like families coming together that are created, kind of, not yeah. You know what I'm trying to get at. But yeah, that's it. And just like for me, like I immediately started crying 5 minutes in once you see a little girl, because like I immediately remembered the whole movie. Like a lot of it like, stuck in my mind, but once I saw a little girl, I was like, oh no, this is gonna just make me so sad when when we get to her, like what's gonna happen to her. You know, see her just like so sad and lonely on the porch, and the dad and mom are, I think the son is the one who points it out, and the son is like, oh, she's out there again, and it's like it's just a normal thing, and they just like treat, and it's just like, oh, they just feel like she's just like some outside cat who just hangs out. And even like they first bring her in, they're talking about her in front of her like she's just some street animal, but
Well,
then
she is just a stray at first.
like this pretty much every scene in between, like every time you get a little more information about her home life, like I would just break down, because like you know, because I remember like she's just gonna end up right back there.
It sounds like you were having a difficult time with the movie.
A little bit.
It didn't get me that way, but I have a heart made out of cold iron, so.
No. Like this, I didn't. The first time I saw this, I didn't cry at all. I got emotional, but I didn't cry. But this time, I cried like 5 or 6 times. And in the last 15 minutes, I like Mary came home from work, and she, not came, she was leaving for work, and she was like, "What's wrong with you? Why are you crying?" Like it was, I couldn't even talk. Just like the end sequence with the dad and the son, when they're like, you know, they're not going to see each other again, and this is so beautiful and wonderful. And this, when the son, when Shoto says, finally says dad, and then you get this, the final shot of the little girl when she is back where she started. It's this, although she is, seems more confident at the, in the final shot, but still, I don't know, it's open ended. Like, I feel like she will come out better and maybe she'll run away. Because there are all these scenes. Huh?
I don't even know. I don't even know what's gonna happen with her.
Yeah,
You
I
know?
don't know. Like, I hope that, like, and it's just, the thing about this movie is, like, these people do exist in the world, and that's, like, the scary, upsetting thing.
Yeah.
And I don't mean, like, the poor family, I mean, like, her abusive family. Like, those people do exist. And it's, I don't know. And,
Yeah.
like,
I mean, did you take it that part at the end when her mom was like obviously mad at her, you know, like apologize, and then when she didn't, trying to pretend to be nice, did you assume that she did not get tricked that time?
yeah.
Yeah. I don't, it's a little kid, you want to believe that your parent is good.
Yeah, but she has seen what a good parent is, so hopefully something, you know, some good will come out of her life. And
Hopefully.
I love all the scenes, because there are all these scenes of like how you learn people are how the family's connected. Like there's like the when the little girl is with the mom in the bath, and they're like, "Oh, you have a birthmark too? We're the same." And like the Aki and the little girl are like, "Oh, I have two names too." And there are all these little connections.
Yeah.
It's just very sweet. Like I don't know if I can watch this movie again, because it affected me so much this time. But
So you're saying
I don't
people
know. Like,
shouldn't watch this movie is what you're
I say, if you're kind of emotionally raw or open, it might, you know, really get to you.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like the filmmaking that I just love. Like, it's just shot so well and so beautifully. Like, it. I guess that's another Ozu connection. Like, the house. Like, you really get a feel of what the house is like and what the routines are. But,
Yeah.
I don't know. What
I
else?
mean, it's we're not saying it's not Ozu-like, but it
Yeah.
isn't.
I'm just more complaining about people who say, like, this is just like an Ozu movie, which happened when
Yeah.
it came out, which is false. But let's see. I don't know. I don't know. That's it. Like I do really love this movie. It was on Hulu for a long time. Now it's not.
No, it still is.
It
I
still
watched it
is.
on Hulu.
I paid $4 to rent it on Amazon.
Yeah, that's what all those tears were for.
Okay. So like this. Like other. Con winners we covered, which was the Pella Conqueror, Rosetta, the school, the class. I think that's it so far. But this feels like this really fits into those other movies we covered, coincidentally, because they all of them have very strong performances by children.
Right, and they also all feel like they have a kind of verite feeling, like this could be based on real life kind of thing. And wait, okay, so what were they again? Pele the Conqueror,
Rosetta, the class.
Rosetta class. At least Rosetta, Pele, and Shoplifters all have to do with poor people just trying to, like, make it in life. And the class definitely has that in it with the children in the class itself. Those also, maybe that's how you win con. It's got to be about lower class people or whatever.
You got to have a good kid performance. Has to be about low class people. Has to be a little sad and a little funny.
Yep, you basically, yeah, that's you and me. We could win con.
What else?
A little sad and a little funny.
Has to be in a foreign language, too.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, but like...
When was the last time an English language movie won?
Fahrenheit 9/11?
Oh, God.
That got the Palme d'Or over Old Boy for some reason.
Spike Lee's Old Boy?
Yeah, the Spike Lee one.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, can't be right every time.
Yeah. Well, that is an example of the Grand Prix winner being better than the Palme d'Or winner. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. How would you rank the Cannes movies we covered?
So I'd say that the class would probably be on the bottom, and it's just because
it's more interesting idea than a good movie.
Right, yeah, and like the contemporary time period, like I found those children to be pretty irritating in general. Which is, I mean, it's, you know, it's a classroom full of kids, so what are you gonna get? But yeah, it's still good. It's still a good movie. I don't think I would ever rewatch it. Next, I would say Pele the Conqueror, because that's a very well shot, very well acted, just sad. Just sad beyond real belief.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, Max
probably
has Max Van Sydow, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, great stuff that way. And, you know, just some terrible things happen.
Yeah, it's true.
But I think Rosetta, and this one might be tied, like, Rosetta was a harsh, once again, a sad, harsh movie to watch. But it's so well done. Like, that, whoever plays Rosetta in that movie, she just freaking knocks it out of the park.
It was her first movie, too.
Yeah.
But,
really amazing.
Want to hear something crazy?
No, I don't. Alright, tell me.
I like Rosetta more than Shoplifters. Like, it's been, 6 months since we did that episode, and Rosetta is a movie that I'm still, like, every other day, I'm thinking about it.
But you love this movie.
I do love this movie, but Rosetta, something about it just, like, cuts right through me. I'm not sure what it is about that movie.
It's really damn fucking good.
Yeah.
To use all the curse words I know.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this, go watch Rosetta. It should be more famous. There's a Criterion DVD out there, but it's not streaming, like, anywhere.
Yeah, that's the problem with it. I had to buy the DVD in order to watch it, so... But I am glad I have it now, because it's a really good movie.
Yeah. And, like, so for me, it'd be, like, Rosetta, Shoplifters, Pella, and, the other one? Oh, The Class. I forgot what it was called.
The Class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Class is fine. I'll never watch it again. I'm fine with it. And do we have any other Can winner? Oh, okay, we have a couple more Can winners coming up. No, we're doing possibly an episode with Alistair on that one, because a Russian movie won Best Foreign Film, and he wants to talk about it.
All right, if I have to.
I'm totally fine with that. Because I might keep this in, but 94 is Pulp Fiction or Forrest Gump, which are two movies that are...
Oh, yeah, Forrest Gump for sure.
I think they're talked to death, and it's kind of... I mean,
well, what's the... what's a Grand Prix?
The Grand Prix for 94? I gotta check that. Because we did a Tarantino episode already. Oh, John Waters' Serial Mom was a closing film of that year. But that's the movie I refuse to see because it's has Matthew Lillard in it, so
So what?
I find his on-screen presence to be very irritating.
He's great in the season 3 of Twin Peaks.
That's
so
the one thing the one thing I like that he's ever done. Okay, so the Grand Prix winner was a tie between, wait for it, Burnt by the Sun, the Russian movie that Alistair likes, and To Live, a Chinese movie. So, yeah, it'll probably be Burnt by the Sun. I have to actually talk to him about a time.
So, just to spite Alistair, we're going to do To Live.
Yeah. No. We have to talk about something Russian to have him
All
on.
All right.
But, let's see, so, I'm going through past, Palme d'Or winners, recent ones, and the Tree of Life, one, that's, in English, and before that it was Fahrenheit, then, you gotta go way back to Pulp Fiction, The Piano, then before that Part and Fink, Wild at Heart, Sex Like the Videotape. There have been a few, but not too many. Yeah, we're going to do Wild at Heart towards the summer, actually.
Wild at Heart.
Yeah, the Lynch movie.
Why?
That won the Palme d'Or, and the guest.
Oh, okay.
Wanted that over whatever won the Oscar that year, which I don't even remember.
I don't know why I'm on the wrong podcast to be able to do Lynch movies.
Anyway, so, I don't know. I don't feel like doing 2018 movies. Because we did that.
We've done them.
We've done them. But I thought of one that I did not bring up. It's technically a 2019 movie also. It was released this year, but made last year, but it's this interesting, I say too much, it's this bizarre little, like, twisty-turny how do you explain it? Domestic thriller type thing about called Braid, where these two girls who are drug dealers have to get money from this house where their friend lives, and their friend had a mental break and she lives by herself, and I'll leave it at that. And it was former guest Megan Sunday mentioned to me on Twitter because she knows I love The Baby and said, like, this looks kind of looks like The Baby. And it kind of is like The Baby in some unexpected ways. But it's this really, really offbeat, strange, like psychedelic movie. And I don't want to say too much because it's like Shoplifters. It's a movie that you should go and you should go in blind and not really know what is going to happen.
Right.
Just like go for a ride.
But. Somebody's dressed as a giant baby, is what you're...
No, more like a weird fucked up family dynamic.
Okay. So, Immemora.
Not that fucked up. But still pretty fucked up. Mm-hmm. And, that's it. The next pairing I just had up... Put my phone away. Is Jungle Fever with Dave Stone Rob. So that'll be a fun one.
And you already discussed the song.
Yeah, I did. It's a good song.
Is it?
I like that Stevie Wonder soundtrack. It's really good.
I don't like that song, Jungle Fever.
You like Stevie Wonder?
I like Stevie Wonder.
Okay. I don't know what music you
the
like.
The song kind of misses what the point is to me.
Well, yeah. But Stevie Wonder, it's a good song. You can't complain about that. And that's paired up with not Barton Fink, because it'll be a crossover episode with damn it, the Dune podcast with Megan and Bo from Let's Get
Yeah, I'm
Weirding.
trying to blank out.
Is it Let's Get?
Yes.
Okay, there's another similar named one out there. It's Let's Get Weirding with Megan and Bo. That'll come up because I know they both really love Silence of the Lambs. Slash, you love that movie too, and
Yeah, I just rewatched it recently, so.
I haven't seen it since I was 17, and I love them now 17, but I don't know, I just haven't watched it again. But I do like it did leave a big impact on me. Like I can't look at Anthony Hopkins the same way again because of that. Which I think is for worse, because it's hard for me to enjoy him in movies, because I always think of him in Silence of the Lambs.
Hey, I've seen him in so many things.
But he loved.
I like that movie because it seems like a lot of stuff he does, he just plays Anthony Hopkins, but in Silence of the Lambs, he's definitely Hannibal Lecter.
That'll be a fun one. And, the documentaries episode should be this month, but I don't know. I don't know when we're on.
Don't pressure us.
Eventually, we'll get to the documentary episode. If not, there is a secret episode planned for this month that hopefully should happen. And yeah, how many? What, 9 hours of documentaries you have to watch? 9 or 10 hours?
Something like that, depending on whether or not,
Yeah, so, and that's it. So what stuff are you doing?
Nothing right now. Absolutely nothing. Just this podcast. I'm taking it easy.
Okay. I've this comes out the 12th or 14th, but I will record with Kessler again on FlixWise Canada on no, I will say it. We're gonna do the Female Prisoner Scorpion series for an episode. So that I'm
You've already
recording.
seen all those movies.
It's my favorite film series. It's a perfect blend of high art and sleazy entertainment to me.
I like the Pink Panther. Just kidding.
Those are funny. Well, the early ones are funny.
I honestly haven't seen a single one.
I saw some of them when I was a kid, but I don't remember too much. But what else? Some other stuff on my review site, Jailhouse701. But I don't know what the schedule is. But I just did a Dr. Akagi, a really fun MMR movie. One of his lighter ones, and it's pretty ridiculous, and it should be more famous. But read my review. It's might be confusing if you haven't seen it, but at least click on the page. And yeah, that's it.
All right. Watch Shoplifters.
It's on Hulu. And if you're Canadian, it's on Amazon.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com and Spotify and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell, and thank you for listening.